Well, at this time on Wednesdays, we like to say hello to our friend Justin Worsham, host of the Dad Podcast, to talk about, you know, dad things.
Oh, let me hit that button, too. Hey, Justin, what's going on?
Not much, my man. Nothing
much. Hey, Chief.
Chief. Wait. Okay, Justin, I have a question. This actually goes back to last week. Do you prefer a stranger call you Chief or Boss? Okay, Boss.
Give me the other one.
Okay, Chief.
I think I'd go Boss.
Yeah.
I don't know if that. I don't know if this is. I'm really afraid that I'm stepping into some kind of like Rorschach personality test where I've just exposed that I have mommy issues. I mean, I feel like my segment's big enough for that.
No, but. It's just the.
So the CDC has launched a tool to help parents make that big decision.
Go, Shannon, go. yes, it has. And let me tell you, as somebody who's used this tool, it is absolute garbage. Like, it's pointless. At first, I was excited because, you know, in the beginning, there were schools that were talking about doing, like, hybrid. That's what we were going to do here in Burbank, that you had a choice. You could do 100% distance learning or a hybrid model where your kid would at least go into school, smaller classrooms, yada, yada, yada. So I'm like, oh, this is really cool. It's nothing. It's a PDF document that you punch in these bullet points, and it tells you if you check unsure for any of these questions, you should talk to your school administrator. They need to find somebody who used to make those dating quizzes at Cosmopolitan and tell them how to make an actual quiz that helps you feel informed.
Those are so good.
It does seem silly, and it seems a little bit overdone. I mean, the questions are, for example, I feel comfortable with my school's reopening plans for reducing risk of spreading COVID-19. Agree, disagree, unsure, or does not apply. Now, if you're going to the CDC website to fill out a form to determine whether or not you're comfortable sending your kid back to school, it seems like you're overdoing it at that point. It seems like you're going to a step that you don't have to take.
No, but here's the thing. Like, the reason why I was drawn to it is because I have a ton of parent friends who, before we decided, it was announced that we are not going back, it's 100% distance learning, which is a whole other thing for me. There were a lot of people who were nervous about the decision. And so, much like, in my opinion, a lot of government things, like, this comes out a little bit. I mean, we're, what, a week away from school starting, and now we get to process our feelings on how we're going to make the decision?
Right.
And that's what I thought it was going to do, and it doesn't even do that. I think that people that are wired closer to like you and I, Gary, is that maybe it's easier for us to make a decision. But there's a lot of parents that are out there that they really struggle. And I'm not trying to bag them or make fun, because I think what it is that there's a part of them that wants the kid to go to school, because getting that live instruction, being able to interact with their friends is so beneficial. But they're worried that, like, it, to me, it's a very exaggerated example of your kid wakes up and goes, oh, I don't feel good, you know? And I do this all the time where I'm like, ah, you're fine. You're fine. Just have some breakfast. You're all right. And then you have that occasion where you come back and you get a call because your kid just painted the nurse's office with his vomit. And you're like, why would you send this kid to school? Why are you a horrible parent? And I think that the coronavirus is a very extreme example of that, where you want your kid to go to school because it's what's best for him. But of course, nobody wants their kid to get sick or their kid to accidentally make somebody else sick.
Well, I mean, we've talked about the issue of sending kids back to school over and over and over again about who is most at risk in the event that there is some sort of an outbreak at school, right? I mean, studies that I have read, and I'm not saying I've read all of them, but the ones that I have read and seen show that COVID-19, if a kid gets it, COVID-19 does not wreak havoc on their bodies the way it would somebody who's 65 or older. And in most cases, a kid who tests positive for it is never going to show symptoms at all. So that's not who is at risk. I mean, to your point about this being sort of like, am I doing the right thing? It's not that your kid is at risk. It's the question
of, is your kid spreading it around?
Right. Who would they transmit it to if they had it?
And then that person would have to, based on, so the incomparable Gary and Shannon show talked about this story. I heard it while I was in my car, where you talked about Sweden left their schools open. Finland did not, right? And that they found that there was no statistical difference between the amount of kids that contracted coronavirus versus kids that were going to school with zero, like, rules, nothing, and kids who were staying at home and doing distance learning, right? that blew my mind, and I dug into it. And the only downside that I found, based on what I did, what I dug into, is that Sweden did have a higher death rate than any other country, but 95% of those people were over the age of 60. So the real risk is to the elderly, which I think everybody's been kind of beating that drum, and nobody's trying to say, let's thin the herd of the elderly, right? That's not my point either. But I do think if you don't have grandma or grandpa living at home with you, right, that we could arguably statistically have 70 to 80% of our kids back in school getting live instruction. I mean, right now at Burbank, I think, listen, I love my school district. I love everybody involved, but we got a really bad program. Like, they're doing 4 days a week, and on the fifth day, there's nothing. Everything is distance learning. And it's the idea is, and I've never been a teacher, so I don't want to come across like a bagging on teachers. There's a lot I don't know about this. But what doesn't make sense to me is that the amount of instruction, a friend pointed out to me, did the math. On an average school week, kids get 27 hours of instruction. Under this model, they're getting, I think it's like 10 hours for the course of the week. During a regular school week, a teacher has 10 hours to prepare and do lesson prep. The instruction time is being cut in half, but they have 13 and a half hours to spend in planning their lessons now. It's not a good balance. We should at least have kids in the schools for 5 days a week, half a day, maybe. I even saying that out loud, it makes me worry that maybe there's something that I'm missing. But I can't help but feel.
About the numbers there, and I think that that's something that's been missed a lot of times. Is if you were to carve out, even if you made an entire list of people who are potentially at risk, whether it's kids who live in multi-generational households, kids with underlying health conditions, teachers with underlying health conditions, and I include, 65 plus in that, that if you were to carve out all of those people and make carve outs for every single one of those, that you still have 75% of that school population, staff, faculty, and students that are willing, able, and capable of being back in class. And then we accommodate those other 25%, whether that's online learning that's supplemented, basically a live camera within the classroom, or some sort of hybrid version of learning for those kids who are going to be at risk or whose households may have somebody who are at risk. That you could get the vast majority of kids and faculty back on campus without creating a cesspool of doorknob licking COVID patients.
Right. And I always talk to my kids about natural consequences, right? And there's a fear that I have underlying all of this is that I think that the real reason why we're seeing what we're seeing in the schools here in Southern California has more to do with a litigious society, that all it's going to take is a teacher, going to school, right, or even a kid, if somebody contracts it, and then that goes away, because we're talking about city governments who are connected to county governments and state governments, that's a big piggy bank that people could just cash in all day long. And I'm not even saying that in that case, like if your kid gets ill or a family member gets ill and dies, I'm not even trying to argue that you're not entitled necessarily to that money. I can't argue the damages, but
it looks like a lot of school districts are definitely using the liability issue as they create the rules for going back. And they have to. I mean, legally, their lawyers are telling them that they have to consider that because we are a community of apples.
But I wish that was a part, and I hate this word narrative. I wish that was what I'm not hearing that. I'm hearing it's for the safety, it's for the good of the kids. I wish that somebody could get out there and say, listen, we don't want to get our butts sued, so everybody's staying at home.
Well, you good hear luck. It here on the Gary and Shannon Show, don't you?
Justin, right. Can you hold on? Billy writes to us and says, Justin Worsham is so bitchin' and funny.
More, don't forget hot. Guys.
More with Justin.
I feel like we've been talking about my attractiveness.
Well, we haven't seen you.
Yeah, we can't attest to that. We used to be able to say, I got eyes on this guy. That's one hot potato. Now we go, he sounds nice.
Yeah.
Am I the only one still not allowed in the building, or is it still like?
No, we're all back.
Yeah, we're all back. We're just.
Oh, Nick told me I'm not allowed. Maybe I need to take it up with Viverka.
Yes. Gary and Shannon will continue.
Justin Worsham has joined us. We talk about all things going on in the parenting world. There's an interesting study in the journal Developmental Psychology about over-controlling parents. We might call them helicopter parents or whatever, but that they interfere with the ability of kids to regulate their emotions and control behavior. And that a less controlling approach is good for the mental health, not just of the kids, but of the parents as well.
Mm.
Yeah, we've talked about this on other segments about how, like, there's more and more statistical data that says, you know, like the snowplow parenting, the lawnmower parenting, the more you fight the instinct to make your kid's life easier, as, you know, stupid as that or antithetical to the point that may sound, the better off your kid is. But what I like about this one is this one also points out the advantages of your own mental health as a parent, where if you're not there kind of constantly trying to stimulate your kid or find all these things, like, you can actually have some you time because your kid is independent, that it's beneficial for everybody, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they refer to it as something in this study. They refer to it as the respectful approach intervention.
Yeah.
Where you treat your younger kid as a capable and independent human being. Which is, I mean, that's a little weird. They can't even clean up their underpants off the floor. But, you know, you're supposed to treat them as capable and independent.
It's National Underwear Day.
What?
Yeah. Wait, you just found out?
Listen, I'm in a hole, evidently.
It's 2 p.m.
I don't think I've changed underwear since this whole thing started.
Oh, well, today might be the day. Today might be the day.
Well, we'll see. But the reason I wanted to talk about this today is because we spent, you know, all the things talking about what's going on with schools and everything, and it looks like everybody in Southern California is going to have distance learning unless Orange County can win their lawsuit against the governor with no courts being open. I can't wait. But I think that this is a little bit of a thing for you, each parent, to put on their shoulder to say you don't have to stress so much about your kid's education, that the more you can kind of put it on them, sure, maybe it's arguably not as effective as if you're, you know, they have one-on-one learning and tutoring. But I would argue that it is more effective in what I call the life skills category of academia, which is very neglected, in my opinion, where they just learn a work ethic, right? They learn to focus on a task and to get it done, as opposed to, you know, if they're whatever they miss in arithmetic, they're going to make up in Moxie, I guess is the way I want to put it.
Moxie? What are you, from 1949?
How dare you? Listen, guys, I am very fragile here because I am missing you more than a grown man should. And I just found out 7 minutes ago that there is no more lockdown at iHeart in Burbank, that I'm just sitting here in my studio at home for no reason using my cell phone minutes when I could be there drinking all of the handsomen of Gary Hoffman, getting my promised 20-second hug. I'm waiting for that. So unbeknownst to you, I have taken measures so that I can be safely in studio, hopefully by next week.
That sounds great. We can't wait to see you. We know this is all about you wanting compliments on your attractiveness, and that's fine too.
Yeah, it sounds like someone's been working out over COVID.
Someone's a little thirsty.
Well, just based on what I have to do to get in there, I'm going to try to find a way to show off my flattering figure, but it may not work out. But it may be photo worthy at the worst.
We love you.
Justin, thank you.
I love you, boy.
Justin Worsham, host of the Dad Podcast.